I was born secular and inconsolable. That's an opening line from a song by alt-pop artist Jenny Lewis. An opening line I think most writers, including me, would give one of their less necessary limbs to have written. Secular and inconsolable. Rational and desolate, intelligent and lonely. Successful and unfulfilled, wealthy and starving. They are aspects of contemporary life that ring all too true. Secular and inconsolable, she says. And she doesn't speak it as a way of telling us to get religion. She speaks it because to her heart it is true. Because it speaks of a way of being so common in this and every age, a nearly ubiquitous part of the human experience, the hunger for a form of sustenance that feeds us on a deeper level than literal food. To be in our postmodern age both secular and inconsolable is not so different from the state of being Henry David Thoreau once described when he said, "Most people live lives of quiet desperation." Both tell us of a gaping space yawning out from the inner core where meaning should be. Somewhere deep in the soul, a lonely spot that beckons to be filled. It is an experience of hollowness that so many have had over the ages, a yearning for something, though we do not know what, something that can work not just to fill the pockets and feed the body, but nourish the spirit and restore the soul. To bring richness and life and abundance to the hollowed out places of our innermost being. But what are we to fill it with, this empty place, this hungry heart, this inconsolable gap? History has offered many possible answers, most of which work for some of the people, some of the time. The possibilities are not unfamiliar. Leaving aside just for now the desperate filling sought out by the addict or the compulsive, let us look at a few other options. Some have said and will always say that there is a God-shaped hole in the soul that can only be filled by the love of a divine power. Some have said and will always say that only passion and action for a cause, any cause, be it nuclear disarmament or anti-abortion or left or right-wing politics, can plug the hole, pouring zeal into the heart of our hopelessness. Most of the time we are not courageous enough to admit that we have at times tried very hard to plug the hole with stuff. With more books, my vice, and a bigger TV, and a better house. And only in therapy do most of us admit that we try to plug the hole with utter dependence on our loved ones, asking our parents, our spouses, our children to hold the meaning of our lives in their hands. Spiritual hunger, I think, is that insatiable yearning to be consoled by the nameless source of all hope. It is the drive, chosen or unchosen, to be made whole. It is the force we cannot deny that tells us life is about more than survival. Life is to be fully lived. It is that yearning which pushes us to seek bread for the spirit even when the belly is full. Theologically, there are a number of traditions which say we hunger and we yearn because we are broken. There is a hole in us because we are broken, and the gap inside our souls yearning to be filled by hope and meaning is evidence of our sinfulness. But there are also traditions which say that our yearning is the very thing that makes us human. Our desire to be connected to one another and to the source of all hope, the greatest gift that providence could bestow. As C.S. Lewis once said, this hunger is better than all fullness. This poverty better than all other wealth. This yearning, thus, for some traditions, is one of the great gifts that comes along with being a flawed and struggling human being. Our incompleteness is what makes us whole. It is what keeps us going forward. It is when we follow that incompleteness down paths of connection and hope that we have a chance of becoming ever better people. So who's to say that our hunger, our hole in the soul, is such a bad thing after all? Perhaps it is the very thing we can count on when all else fails, the beautiful side effect of our flawed humanity. It has become a popular theme in recent decades to list the apparent simple charms of life in underdeveloped countries or indigenous religious traditions, places where people are happier with less, where they live longer without the trappings of Western civilization, and where their joy is not dampened by their sometimes tragic economic and social circumstances. You've probably heard similar stories of yak herders, say, in the Tibetan highlands living peacefully and joyfully in their yurts, of monks dancing with their begging bowls, and half-starved tribes people in the Amazon teaching Westerners how to love life again. We have come to know and appreciate these connections that these people still have to their communal roots and the soul-sustaining force of distinct cultural traditions. And I do not doubt that this theme of happiness found in distant places among other people is so popular because it's partly true. The gaping hole in our souls is smaller when we live alongside a community of care. That's a part of why we exist as a church. Hunger is sometimes satiated by ritual and tradition and shared stories, and the yearning is less when a person is rooted in a particular tradition and a particular group of people. But let us not totemize the Tibetan yak herder and the Indian rag picker and the Buddhist monk as if they are a different kind of person entirely, the kind capable of meaning-making, while we, ensconced in our wealth, look to them to be our gurus. Let us not pretend that angst is a specifically Western phenomenon hoisted upon our shoulders by dint of our unusually wealthy nation and its long commutes and spacious accommodations. It is a fallacy to think that if we just gave it all away, picked up our rake and our hoe and tended the fields of the world, it would all be okay and our spirits would hunger no more. Spiritual hunger is not our phenomenon uniquely. It was not conceived in the churning engines of the Industrial Revolution, nor born through the seismic paroxysm of globalization. It is a human phenomenon that transcends our time and our nation and our very wealthy place so often in the family of things. Spiritual hunger is a human phenomenon. All of the great religious traditions, including Buddhism, which seeks to eliminate desire, acknowledge that that hunger is real, that it is true, and that it requires our attention. It is in the very nature of this particular beast that we are to yearn. And we share this yearning with every man, woman, and child everywhere. It is the burden we bear, the gift we receive. For as long as we yearn, we search, and as long as we search, we are becoming something new. This incompleteness, this desire to be fed, often takes us places we did not plan upon going. Like nomadic hunters following the herds for their source of food, we follow our spiritual yearnings where they lead. If we are hungry, we go where the food is, even if it takes us in unexpected directions, over unfamiliar terrain. Turning away is only an option if one chooses starvation. And so the wise among us carry on, looking to the pull of our yearning to take us where we must go. That happened to me in a very tangible, literal way when I allowed myself to be fed by an experience that scared me, an experience of shared worship among people I love. I didn't expect it, nor did I know to ask, but I followed my hunger, and the beauty of it all was that I ended up being fed in ways I never could have imagined. As some of you know, I have for a few years now been participating in a group of young adult clergy from all across the country who gather a couple of times a year for worship, for learning, for fellowship. This program is designed for ministers in their first years of ministry and in their first settlements. It's a time notorious for burnout and general freak out among those in my profession. And the idea behind the group is that we get these young adult clergy together for worship, for conversation, for reflection, for, you know, getting better at our jobs. But the wonderful side effect is that it is a time to feed our souls so that we can in turn have something to offer you. I remember arriving at the first meeting of this group. As the only Unitarian Universalist, I was also the only one among those gathered who did not serve an avowedly Christian church. And my anxiety, my sense of not belonging, was pinging off the charts. I could feel myself sizing up every single person that walked in that room as I shook their hand, tallying up the chances of my being judged, of my being accepted, of my being turned away. In the midst of that crowd, I felt undeniably lonely, and I was suspicious, and I was scared. We chatted, and we did that usual get-to-know-you thing that happens when people enter a new social environment. It's the thing that many of you new to our congregation will have to go through sooner or later. And I wanted to let go of my defenses so badly. I needed to give myself the gift of connection, but I didn't know how, and my fear was, for the moment, stronger than my yearning. In the morning, we got up at the crack of dawn for our first worship service together, and as I sat in that circle, still scared, still suspicious, I watched as one of my colleagues carried out a little loaf of bread and a cup of grape juice. And it hit me, oh no. We're going to have communion. Now you see, I had not participated in any such ritual in almost a decade because communion to me meant and still means a great many things, most of which are painful. I grew up Roman Catholic, and I remember what it felt like and how earnest a choice it was when I chose to step aside and let my mother, my father, my friends, and everyone in my community pass me by because they were welcome to the table while I had chosen a path that precluded my participation. I remember what it felt like to be lonely in the midst of that crowd, how empty it was. And when I saw the old symbol of the bread and the wine borne on the hands of my new friends, it all flooded back, and I did not know what I was going to do, or if I could even stay and be among these people anymore. But the service started, and we sang together, and I watched as that little loaf was passed from hand to hand, getting closer and closer to me. It was passed person to person, not one above the others, and there was not, to my great amazement, a doctrinal test in sight. The table was open, the meal was set, and the bread was blessed for the nourishment of all with the words, "The gifts of God for the people of God." All are welcome at this table. And for once, I knew that when my friends said, "The gifts of God for the people of God," the people of God included me. In this communion, we all fed each other, and my friends turned one to another as the loaf and the juice went round the circle, and they passed food to the people next to them. And it came to be my turn. And my friend turned to me, and she looked me in the eye, and she handed me a morsel, and I took it, and I cried. Big, fat, floppy tears. And I turned to the person next to me, and I passed the blessing on. In that moment, I was fed. Not by the theological orthodoxy of body and blood and blah, blah, blah. But by the unsurpassed simplicity and generosity of being a part of a community that welcomed me. I was fed by my friends, and they asked me in turn to feed them. And the space inside of me that was frightened and that caused me to feel so terribly alone was for that time so full that it overflowed in big, fat, floppy tears. Only in that fullness did I realize how hungry I had been. Hungry for connection, for spiritual depth, for the fellowship of those who, like me, tend these wild vineyards. Only in that fullness did I know how much I yearned for the transforming power of connection, and only in that fullness could I let go and be a part of something so much bigger than myself. A community that feeds me still. For me, that act of literally feeding one another was a powerful symbol of spiritual nourishment offered to each of us when we let ourselves be vulnerable, even when we're afraid. Be brave, even when we're suspicious. And let ourselves be truly connected to one another. I don't tell you this story to suggest that we're going to start doing communion during our Sunday services at Brew. Or that I didn't hear a gasp. Or to say that traditional communion should be a connection that will matter to you. It's just a window into a broader truth that only when we allow ourselves to be fed in whatever way spiritual food presents itself can we see how hungry we are. Only when we cry big, fat, floppy tears of realization can we see how beautiful it is to be together and how nourishing it is to participate as one small part of a vast and interconnected mystery. You follow the hunger where it takes you. For me, it took me in that moment into the orbit of some loving and generous people who expressed their connection with that particular ritual. For you, that hunger might lead any number of places. The important thing is that it leads you to a fuller, more honest, and more loving and loved version of yourself. Since this topic, spiritual hunger, is a theme for us this month at Brew, some of our small groups, including the Women's Chalice Group, have been looking at it during the course of their discussions. They've been asking each other questions like, what do you yearn for? Is this yearning a good thing or a bad thing? Shall it be embraced or overcome? I was delighted that the Women's Chalice Group actually got back to me on some of their conversations, and they said that, first of all, they yearned for clean kitchens. Which we don't want to underplay the importance of that. They went on to say that they yearned for relationships, deep and meaningful ones, both with people and with the divine, whatever that is or is not. That they yearned for prayers that worked and for lives that are rich with interconnection. Like me, they hunger for deep relationships in which they know one another and are known. They hunger for connection and can only imagine that their participation in that group, this congregation maybe even, might be one way of following their yearnings where it leads. For what do you hunger? What empty space might be filled? Not with compulsion, not with accumulation, but with peace. And where might you go if you are courageous enough to follow your deep yearning? Might we at least be wise enough to admit when we are hungry? And may we be loving and generous enough to offer one another true food that will sustain us on the journey ahead. Amen.